I'll let you in on a little secret in terms of how the podcast gets produced, behind the scenes sort of thing. I do this these conversations a couple of weeks in advance, and I've thoroughly enjoyed doing it, and I've learned a lot. And you know, before we get to part two of my conversation with Juliet Watt, it got me to thinking, with the conversations that I'm having with her, that it triggered me in terms of the importance of helping someone else when they're going through. Or you see someone with compassion fatigue. Right now I've got a good friend of mine who's going through it. And what I've learned from doing this show is that, you know, you need to reach out and help them, because they're not going to ask for help because they think that they're bothering someone. So, you know, last weekend I dropped in. From time to time I've been, you know, bring her food, reach out and see how she's doing by giving her a phone call. But I could see when I showed up at her house and brought her the food that it's been taking a toll on her. Her husband is not getting any better, and she realizes it. But, you know, when people are going to go through tough times like this, they really do need their friends, and you need to reach out and help them out, because at some point it could happen to all of us. So that's all I wanted to say. If someone's in dire need and you know that they need could do with a friend, reach out and help them. Now here's part two of my conversation with Juliet Watt in the importance of recognizing and helping people when they have compassion fatigue.
This is the Executor Help Podcast, the show for people who want the sense of security knowing all their affairs are in order. Avoid the stress and anxiety of what could happen to your estate, to your assets, and to your family when you're no longer here. Now here's your host, David Eady.
When it comes to the compassion fatigue, and how it can affect different people in different ways. Now, depending on their personal circumstance or background, what should people look for? What, you know, how can they combat and cope with it?
They look for this constant feeling of frustration, this constant irritation, being short with other people, getting angry for silly things. Isolating themselves, not going out, not being with any friends, sort of slowly detaching themselves from any kind of connection with other humans, including their own family, including their kids. Drinking is a definite next thing, substance abuse. Suicide has been pretty prominent. And just this feeling of worthlessness in yourself, that you are nothing, that you're not yourself. There is no person. There is no self-confidence. Once you get into that syndrome, you know something's wrong. And when you head to burnout ends in the drinking and the substance abuse and the potential suicide. And I know that sounds awfully dramatic, but it's absolutely true, David. That's where it goes. And the recognition of it should be right at the beginning. Why am I feeling frustrated? Why is everything getting on my nerves? Oh, I'm looking after mom or dad. Oh, I have to drive an hour and a half because she won't move, you know, or I can't have her in my home. And you suddenly go, okay, maybe I'm going through this. And I had a lot of clients say to me, am I going through it? And I said, well, yeah, look what you're doing. You know, I had one lady in particular who had a child who was mentally unwell to a point of being very violent. I mean, he was 16 and he would try and break into the bedroom and kill her and stuff like that. And she didn't know what to do. And she kept sending him to various schools and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And I said, your life is in risk. He needs to be removed from the house. She said, well, I can't do that. He's my son. I said, but you're going to die. He's got a knife when he comes into you. And there is the line. Who's more important, the person you're taking care of or yourself? And it has to be you, David. It has to be you.
Yeah. So are there any effective strategies or techniques for coping with and managing? Yeah. Compassion fatigue?
For sure. I mean, first of all, recognize it and go, hang on a minute. This isn't me. Something's wrong. So you have the situation where you have to have this person in your care. And it doesn't matter what it is, whether they're at home with you, whether they're not at home with you. It is something where you have given your compassion out and you've got nothing left for yourself. You've given up any aspirations of whatever career you might have wanted. You're going to work like a robot. Nothing means anything anymore. There's no joy in your life. Something's wrong. So you have to sit down and go, okay, yes, this person depends, or these people depend on me for their very existence, but I need to take some time for myself. I need to find some time in the week, one day, one evening where it's mine, where I can maybe go out with a friend or take my wife out for a date, and I will find someone to take care of that person for that day or that night. I would like to go away for the weekend. I will find someone. And if you make up your mind that you are going to take this time for yourself, not feel guilty, find someone to take care of them or help you out. And people, you know, people are innately kind. I mean, unless they're awful, but you know what I'm saying? People have kindness in them. And it's amazing. You don't know help until you ask for it. You have to ask for help. And I've done it so many times. And people have said, absolutely, you know, absolutely, I'll help out. And you're like, really? Oh, great. And
sometimes people don't want to be a burden. Exactly.
Yes.
They don't want to bother people. They figure this is my problem. And
that's right.
But I guess you really won't know unless you ask.
You will never know. And there's a way of asking. You know, you don't march up and go, listen, mom's making me ill. Can you? No. You just explain to them, listen, I'm feeling this. And could you possibly, maybe just an evening, maybe just start with one evening, you know, and then see how you feel. Now, that first evening is going to be really hot because you're going to be worried all the time. But understand that and go, okay, this is the first time I've been away from them and put them in somebody else's care. I'm going to worry. So you're going to go running back. Everything's okay. Okay. The next time you do it, you won't worry so much. And the kindness that will come from you asking for help is extraordinary. You open the doors to people because people want to help. People want to be kind. They want to help you out, but you just said it. You're absolutely correct. They don't know how until you ask. You don't ask because you don't want to bother anybody. But who suffers? You do.
Well, so how can individuals prioritize their own self-care and well-being while still fulfilling their caregiving responsibilities?
Well, so we've talked about taking the day off, taking the night off, trying to get a weekend, that kind of thing. The other thing is, and this is really a lot more women are in this position than men. There are men in it, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of women. And they tend to let themselves go. I mean, I had one client who children had become her whole life. She had immersed herself in the care of her children. There was nothing wrong with these kids, but she lost her life. She just, that was it. She was a mother and she was starting to get compassion fatigue and she was in it. And I said to her, do you know what you're feeling, what you're going through? And she said, no, I just have to take care of them. I mean, it was like this robotic thing, but I said, okay, what I'd like you to do, I would like you to look in the mirror. Do you like your hair? Does it look good? Do you wear makeup? When was the last time you put makeup on, a nice dress, pair of jeans, groovy shirt, whatever, and looked in the mirror, did your hair for no reason, just for the day? You know what I'm saying? Just to do your day. And she said, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And I said, well, that's where we begin. Because I said, I'm saying this with love. You look like hell. You look frumpy. You look like a frumpy woman. And you're not. You're a very attractive.
Juliet, there's that mouthiness again. There's that mouthiness.
But you know what? She thanked me. what am I going to do, David? It's my job to tell the truth. And I said, you're a lovely person. You're a pretty woman. You could be gorgeous. I said, and you look frumpy. And she was like, oh my God, thank you. No one has ever said that to me. I said, and no one ever will. I mean, you know, I don't have a filter because I care. I will always tell the truth, always. And we turned her life around, totally. And nobody was the worst aware. Kids got the same good attention, but she came first. The kids had to wait. They had to not get her attention all the time because she was going to go have her hair done and blah, blah, blah. So that, another thing, and for men, take care of yourself too. Go to the gym, work out. I've seen men fall apart, completely fall apart. Sweatshirts and sweatpants become their, you know, because they're taking care of. Take care of yourself. Go look in the mirror. Do you like what you see? If you don't, fix it. Change it.
The compassion fatigue, I can see where, say there's three children and only one of them is looking after the parent. And they can see that they don't know they have compassion fatigue, but it's coming on. They might ask one of the other siblings, say, hey, you know, I've got mom living with me, or I'm checking on mom every day, and could I get a little help from you guys? And they don't get that help from the other siblings. So that just brings even more resentment. I'm sure you must see that all the time as well.
All the time. That's so common. And from a sister and a brother and any other family member, they won't flat out say no, but they'll make 150 excuses. So you'll just stop asking because you know there's going to be another excuse. I wouldn't go to a family member. I'd go to a friend. I'd go to somebody that is outside of the family, you know, who doesn't have an emotional connection. Because when you're in family, there's an emotional connection. A friend doesn't have that. So a friend can come and help out. And unless the person, and I say this with absolute respect, has Alzheimer's or dementia, and they are not themselves, if the person is coherent, compos mentis, they won't treat that person like they treat their family. My mother didn't. Well, actually, my mother did, but not so badly. I mean, my mother had this one thing in her brain. She knew when to be polite, you know, when she needed something. And you'll find that happens. When my mother wanted something or needed something from someone, oh my God, the charm was, I would look at her go, or when she suddenly got this burst of wanting to help someone, and there was this burst of caring that came out of her that was astonishing. You know, it showed this tremendous strength that lived within her. But because her mental state was so bad, and again, David, back in the day, no help, none. If you weren't in your mind in London in those in the 60s and stuff, they sent you to an asylum. And I'm not kidding. You went to a place where they shut the door, and that's where the psychiatrists were, and that's where the lobotomies happened. I mean, it's not for the movies. It really did happen.
Wow.
So today we are so fortunate. We have therapists. We have therapists on Zoom, you know. And if you really do feel so overwhelmed, try and find that. Take an hour every day. Get an online therapist. You can't do it alone, is my point. You need help. You need guidance. You need someone to say, hey, have you thought about doing this? Because when you start to do for yourself, you know, as I said, from the silly things like wearing makeup to taking time for yourself, you will start to feel empowered and you will start to feel better. And the whole, you'll start to get your strength back. And looking after the person isn't so bad now because you've got a plan. You've got a plan. You're not just wafting in this, what I call sweatshirt world of nothingness. You have a plan.
Have you got any...
Does that make sense? Does that make sense, David?
Absolutely. Everything you've said has made sense. And everything that you talked about is a common practice, a common situation as our population, the baby boomers are getting older, that families are finding themselves. And it's going to be one person, a child or whatever, who's going to fall into this, you know, looking after mom or dad or both, and they are going to probably, you know, run themselves down. Or you might have a spouse looking after another spouse who's not doing well and sick, and you know maybe the kids aren't coming around because they don't want to see mom or dad in that situation, so everything falls on the spouse. So how do you know that you're at a high risk for developing compassion fatigue?
When you start to get anxious, when you don't know you're at a risk for it, that's the trickiness of it. And I know what you're saying. How do you know that you're maybe susceptible to it? Yeah. Unfortunately, you don't until you're in the situation. The most important thing is to recognize, okay, I'm in this situation, or to know beforehand, I'm going to take on this burden I didn't ask for. Okay, how am I going to cope with that? Am I the kind of person that can take on that kind of burden? Not really, but I don't actually have a choice because I'm the one. Brothers aren't helping, sister's not helping. Okay, it's me. So this might happen to me, and you can almost prepare for it right then and there. All right, I'm going to make sure that I have extra help. I'm going to make sure that I don't let myself go. I'm going to make sure that I eat. I'm going to make sure that I don't drink too much at night when I'm so exhausted and I think, well, I'll have another. Don't be tremendously disciplined with yourself. Make a list. Just be, it's action. It's taking action rather than sitting waiting for all of this to happen to you, which is going to happen. Take action right at the very beginning, because you asked a very, very good question. You know, you don't know you're susceptible to it. You do know the kind of person you are. I personally, I wouldn't do very well. I would not do well. An animal, yes, I will take care of a sick animal, vomiting, diarrhea. I don't care if it's an animal. Humans, I don't feel that connection. And I know that in myself, but I am 72. Did I know that when I was 20 or 30? Probably not. So age does bring a bit of wisdom, thank God. So I hope I've answered your question. You don't actually know, but you do know who you are.
And that compassion that you don't have for humans, again, I come back to your mom and everything that you went through over the year. I can't believe you're 72. That you're everything you've gone through, that it's, I'm gonna say, damaged or changed your view of humans because of what you, your particular story, is that why you, where you are?
No, and that's a brilliant question. What I went through has made me very helpful to other people. If I hadn't been through what I'd been through. You know, because a lot of people read that book and they're like, oh, please, come on. Every word of it is true. I delayed writing it because I thought nobody's going to believe this. You know, and I've toned down some stuff. But it was such an education, David. It was such a journey of madness that I've come to this end. And it helps me help others because I have this wealth of information. I do not dislike anything because of it. I feel compassionate towards people who have a mother like me. I try to understand, and it's very difficult. I try to understand narcissism and where it comes from. And I just try and be a little bit more understanding now, not to say that I don't lose my temper with them because they are very difficult people. But I think it has given me an immense amount of knowledge. And that I'm grateful for, because you can't look back and go, well, I had a rotten childhood and that's the way it is. I'm just rotten now. Yeah, I feel terrible. I feel rotten. You can't do that because we're all going to die. So I'm now in the last quarter. So I'm not being morbid, but I'm in the last quarter and I'm not going to be thinking about what my mother did to me in this. I'm not going to bother with that because my time is kind of running out. So I want that to be good. I want that to be helpful. I want that to be of service. I like that. You know, I ride horses and that's my solace. That's my peace when I ride my horse, and I compete as well. And that's my enjoyment. But I don't want this last quarter to go unwasted. You know, I do not want to be laying on my deathbed bed going, damn it, I wish I'd done that. Damn it, I wish I hadn't been like that. That is not going to happen to me. I'm not going to be screaming, I hate somebody. Not going to happen.
So why did you write Between the Magic?
I wrote it to give some people a good read, a bit of fun, a bit of a look back into the 60s of London, look back into some history with Beirut and the Palestinians and all of that trouble, and to go, oh, wow, okay, there's a connection now between that and what's going on in Israel today. There's a connection. I also wanted people to really understand my mother was real. You may have a mother too like this. Yes, this is what I did, but this is how hard it was. This is how difficult it was. And none of the things I did that were all the adventures, I did because I wanted to go and have an adventure and a good time. I was in survival mode from 10 years old until 40, just surviving, just getting through. And yeah, I mean, it's that's basic. Is that the answer?
You tell me. It's your story.
I wanted to help people. I really just wanted to say, listen, all this madness happened, but I had a mother. Do you have this mother? I had the inability to, I mean, when I got to the Playboy Club and I had to learn how to deal roulette and I had to learn how to deal blackjack, my math is zero. I mean, I was thrown out of math class because I was hopeless. I mean, I had to learn, but there was someone there who helped me, who said to me, you can't do this, can you? And I said, no, and I have to have this job. And he goes, all right, let's do it this way. And he showed me the way to do it. He showed me the way to count vast amounts of numbers at an extremely high rate and payouts to people and not make a mistake, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought, huh, I wonder if other people have had a Derek Barnard in their life, you know? A little angel that came along and went away, you know? So I just maybe wanted it from a nostalgic point of view. Just all those things rolled into one, bit of history, bit of fun, lots of nostalgia, maybe an insight to famous people aren't really that thrilled with who they are, you know? Just a little bit of reality. And I know it's show busy, but that's all I've ever known is show business. That's been my whole life. So,
well, as we wrap up, looking back on your extraordinary journey, and believe me, it's been a roller coaster. Actually, yesterday before we're emailing back and forth, you're saying yes. It sounds a little bit like a Hollywood movie, and I did. It caught me for a second, going, yeah, because I was going through the questions, and I'm like, yeah, this is a Hollywood movie. Having everything that you've gone through, what advice would you give to somebody who's trying to navigate life's challenges and trying to discover their own path?
Tell yourself the truth and understand that the only thing that gets in your way is you. And that's an old cliche, I know, but choose your friends, choose them carefully. Maya Angelou said something once that is the most powerful thing I ever heard. When someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. Have faith in yourself, be confident, know who you are. And that's the most important thing. Really know who you are and have a mission. I wanted to do a TED talk. This is just a little example. And everybody said, what the hell are you going to talk about? You know, and I said, compassion fatigue. And they said, what's that? And I said, well, listen to the TED talk. And I was determined. And it's very, 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 very difficult to get one, by the way, millions of people are applying. There are many over the country, but it's really hard. I was hell-bent determined, and it involved an immense amount of hard work. And that's the basis of any success. Listen to anybody who talks about how they became successful. The hard work you put in and the single-mindedness of what you have intended to do. I am going to do this. I am going to do a TED talk, and I'm going to do it within a year. And I did it in 6 months. It's almost a self. You have to be very, very, very focused. And when you do that, it gives you this energy you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to sit on my phone and text everybody all the time. I'm not going to do that anymore. I am going to focus on what I want to do, whether it is be a doctor or be a speaker or be an actor. It doesn't matter. Just do the work. Do the work.
Well, I should say, I found you doing your TED Talk online, and it's captivating. It's riveting. Your story, I mean, it was only 12 minutes long. I've spent more than that with you, and you're an amazing, amazing individual. The stories and the passion that everything you've done in your life, you clearly didn't do it half-ass. How can people get in touch with you if they want to, you know, learn more about you, maybe find out more about your coaching?
My website, they can go straight to my website, which is JulietWatt.com. And the spelling is JulieTTE, Watt, WATT.com. That's my website. And through my website is all the coaching information that you will need. Also, my book is on there. If you're interested in that, that's available on Amazon. And it's a very fun read, folks. But it's also lots of other things, too. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that have had a mom like mine, a life like mine, a father who took over their life. I mean, there's a lot in the book that I think is helpful to people. And the website is there, right there, and coaching and everything comes through that.
Well, I can contest that the book is a good read. I'm almost through it, and now that I've had this live conversation with you, it's clearly it's like I'm listening to you talk. Read it to me, but only thing without the nuances and your eyes lighting up every time you would tell your story. So I've been fortunate to have you on the show and have this conversation, Juliette Watt. She is the author of Between the Magic: My Life from the Playboy Club to Beirut and Beyond. You said you'd like to talk about death. Part of this podcast is about talking about death. So clearly you've created your own next invitation, which won't be too long from now, that we're going to talk a little bit more about death and get some more of your thoughts, because I'm sure you've got tons to say. Being a mouthy broad, just saying.
Being a mouthy broad. But no, it's the fascination I have with it. You know, which I'd love to come on and do that, David, because I have no one to talk to about it. And I know that sounds kind of pathetic, but nobody wants to talk about death. Yeah, I am obsessed with it.
Okay. Yes, I'm not obsessed with it, but it's I understand having those conversations. And that's why that's part of the show, what I do here on the podcast. So once again, Juliette Watt, you definitely will be back. And I, again, thank you and appreciate you for what you're doing for others, helping them with compassion fatigue, and just for being you and sharing your story with the rest of the world. Thank you very much. We'll be talking again real soon.
Lovely. Super. Thank you, David. This was great fun and a pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed the episode. Can you do me a favor? Show some love for the podcast by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Can you share it with your community? Subscribe or follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want more information, free resources, or just want to get in touch, go to davidedie.com. Until next time, thanks for listening.